Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. I start today's program in homage to an eagle that roared at elephants. I wrote it and rewrote it and blathered resemblances of it on earlier anniversaries on this program. And it might be my opinion only in all the cosmos. The eagle has landed. Half a century ago, near the end of the previous millennium, on July 20th, 1969, Earthlings rode an eagle to the moon. A magnificent desolation, one of them said. A large step for mankind, said the other. 10 years later, on the very same July 20th date in 1979, a less noticeable miracle occurred on the North Oregon coast. A paper eagle emerged from a 3-year crypt, born again from a premature death. The eagle has landed, proclaimed its page 1 banner line, echoing the message flashed to Earth from space when the moon lander Eagle struck Luna's surface. Beneath the 72-point banner, a glowering American bald eagle glared fiercely out at the world. The rebirth of the North Coast Times Eagle at the end of the Oregon Trail, between a past of Conestoga wagons and a possible future of starships, at a time when gas shortages made it difficult to get home from work, much less rocket to the moon, its rebirth was explained in its first editorial. The born-again bird was resurrected because First Amendment newspapers have become as rare as the nation's symbol, the bald eagle. The independent press has virtually disappeared into the huge corporations that control this country and probably the world. In this age of conglomerate systems, devotion to any principle other than the invoked status quo seem quaint and naive and faintly dangerous, but the enormous pressures of population and economics threaten the way we live. The great contradictions between freedom and property have finally reached us on the North Oregon coast. Like everything else, the role of the press is in question. There should be no doubt. The journalistic media should have no other special interest than the First Amendment. This becomes patently impossible when the media is controlled by corporations whose interests are increasingly in conflict with the Constitution. The esteemed renegade journalist, A.J. Liebling, once said the press was free only to whomever owned one. As the Times Eagle's first born-again polemic suggested 4 decades ago, it seemed naive and quaint to produce a small, impoverished, utopian newspaper at a time when vast political, military, industrial systems imprint their imperious agendas upon billions of human earthlings. These are the true horse riders of apocalypse. Yet there is a fifth rider, a scribe, a scribbler from the Fourth Estate, who documents the glooms and dooms of our busy, ill-tempered species, its perversities and horrors. Defining journalism is slippery. Its primary purpose is to inform. The concept of objectivity, which has propelled the news as its cornerstone for more than a century, history shot on the wing, as Gene Fowler called it, just the facts, as Joe Friday used to say, has an insidious aspect of attempting to disguise very partisan ideas and perspectives, and just might be considered a conspiracy of projecting a status quo, which is a particular way of viewing things and is obviously a partisan operation. Disagreement with this essentially sectarian, agreed-upon fiction is dismissed or denounced as naive or dangerous partisanship, which, for all its renowned excesses, prejudice, and hysteria, the definable partisan media is generally in thunderous opposition with itself, while under the rubric of objectivity, the self-styled mainstream media steadfastly imitates itself. Yet the advocacy media, which acts as stimulus to broaden the definition of journalism and remains currently on its fringe, is vigorously redefining the ideas, concepts, and principles of journalism. Although nearly everybody claims to love, or at least respect, the idea of freedom of thought, speech, and performance, most feel uncomfortable with freedoms they do not endorse, generally regarding them as sources of moral, economic, or unpatriotic decline of the nation and community. What might be construed as independent advocacy media operates in the usual stormy climate of verbal and textually political civil war between those who would enlarge human rights and freedoms and those who would restrict them. This free-range, unfettered media that orbits the alleged mainstream media is a variable hodgepodge of small presses and public radio and television stations, as well as internet blogs uncontaminated by hate, deceit, and robotocracy. The independent advocacy media has few pretensions toward objectivity and fewer illusions about its probability. Most small independent journals, broadcasters, and bloggers are chronically underfunded and generally understaffed, and too often misperceived because they seldom reflect popular opinion. They are also, on average, shrill advocates for large or esoteric causes. They are usually on hard times and fail more often than they are replaced. A common trait among peripheral media is to either revive from a few deaths or succumb forever. They are descended from radical newspapers, tabloids, and magazines that erupted briefly a few decades ago, a period that introduced public and listener-sponsored radio stations such as KMUN and KBOO in Portland, and their lineage threads back to the prickly press that fostered the First Amendment, which denies government or any other entity or person the right to interfere with freedom of speech or press. The eternally persistent efforts by government and powerful commercial patriarchies to control and manipulate public dialogue, particularly in matters of political and social behavior, have always been menacing and usually the guise for authoritarian usurpation of the apparatus of communication. Without an independent media, journalism is hardly more than an adverse method of misleading the citizenry, of providing illusions and deceits to thwart and atrophy personal and collective values and liberties. A vital assumption of democracy is that the flow of information should not be restricted or tampered with. But of course, interfering with and grossly manipulating information is a primary priority of political and corporate power. A cornerstone of the American Revolution and its subsequent Constitution was that a free and unconstrained press was recognized as essential. The First Amendment is America's distinguishing ideal, unfortunately, more in theory than actuality, because the press has itself become a huge corporate conglomerate of print, radio, television, and internet, now called the media, uppercase. Contrary, journalism, distinct from a merely business enterprise, is relegated to the fringes and generally acts as the mouthpiece for radical and esoteric political causes. It is called the alternative media, lowercase. As its first editorial suggested four decades ago, it did seem naive and quaint for a resurgent North Coast Times Eagle to reappear at a time when vast political, military, and corporate journalism systems imprinted, as they continue to do their imperious agendas upon billions of human beings. The original Times Eagle was published weekly in Wheeler, Oregon from 1971 to 1976. Its founder was a prickly dreamer who was a raw independent, passionately devoted to the First Amendment. Robert Stanley Need was his name, and his purpose, his need, you might say, was to challenge the Philistine mainstream media he fervently believed was hypocritical, false-hearted, and cowardly. For five lean and fiery years, Robert Stanley Need published a feisty, rashly eccentric newspaper that was seldom cowed by power and acted with the honesty and courage of an Androcles in a lion's den. Need had guts. He was an environmentalist who fought against the Oregon coast becoming a Coney Island of tourism, and he was outraged at the insidious misuse of power and wealth to exploit and harass local communities and citizens. There were times when Robert Stanley Need and his puny Times Eagle acted out the morality drama of Horatius at the bridge, or the little Dutch boy who stuck his finger in a leaky dike. Unfortunately, Need's raw determination that the Times Eagle be so honest and independent, and that's a quote, that it ultimately frightened away advertisers, and the paper lived such a hand-to-mouth existence that it finally collapsed deeply in debt at the end, a bare skeleton and often late. Its circulation from Lincoln City to Astoria languished to a dribble, its printers unpaid and financial angels flown away. Robert Stanley Need went east and knocked around various small publications. He died in July 2003. I was the next to last editor of the original Times Eagle. 3 years after its demise, the ghost of the old eagle caught up with me in mid-Pacific Ocean and snapped me back to the Oregon coast like an overstretched umbilical cord, and I printed the first issue of The Born Again Bird on July 20th, 1979. My tenure as editor-publisher of the Times Eagle lasted nearly 30 years, deep into the first decade of this third millennium of what is now known as the Common Era. The Times Eagle reawakened into a desolation not quite as magnificent as an astronaut pronounced the moon to be a decade earlier. The mother planet swarmed with billions of busy, ambitious creatures who recklessly despoiled Gaia in dogged determination to transform Terra into their own hubris, wantonly oblivious to the impending onrush of client catastrophe and probable sixth major earthly extinction, humanly derived. A few of the species impoverished most of the rest, yet strangled on the affluence of their affluence. Half of humanity was at least underfed. Millions killed each other or planned to. The world far and near proceeded with its usual human melodrama of wretchedness, squalor, poverty, ignorance, needless tragedy, injustice, wanton slaughter, and a few laughs. I felt the original Times Eagle had perished like a gifted and precocious child killed too early. So for nearly 30 years, I kept it out of a second crypt. I chopped wood, cleaned motel rooms, hauled garbage, and borrowed money from skeptical friends and loyal advertisers. Kept the born-again bird barely afloat on dirty dishwater in coastal restaurants, as a fry cook burning burgers for the masses, pouring beer and wine in shoreside taverns, sold tickets at a museum and a movie theater, sold books at a bookstore, swabbed floors and cleaned toilets. A journalist's life as a member of the poverty press. The Times Eagle circulation was relatively minuscule, though copies of the paper turned up in unlikely places all over the world, and its impact hardly shook the big trees. But the same feeling that brought me back across nearly half the planet to resurrect the born-again bird never abated. Most of all, political and philosophical perturbations aside, I was continually surprised and impressed by the variety of folk who regularly read the newspaper and contributed to it. The quality of writing, art, poetry, and photographs submitted for publication in the Times Eagle was usually as high as seen anywhere, which speaks notably of the indigenous and transplanted talent on this stormy coast, who were responsible for what I continue to think and truly remain grateful for what was good about the Times Eagle. Perhaps some of you listening might remember the Times Eagle, though it has been re-crypted a dozen years. This 40th year commemoration is not simply or even about nostalgia. It is an admonition, a warning that this nation, this world even, is at the cusp of a totalitarian usurpation of democracy and democratic thought, that the First Amendment is more than ever necessary. William Allen White wrote many years ago in a Pulitzer Prize essay, "You say that freedom of utterance is not for times of stress, and I reply with the sad truth that only in times of stress is freedom of utterance in danger. No one questions it in calm days because it is not needed. And the reverse is true also. Only when free utterance is suppressed is when it is needed. And when it is most needed, it is most vital to justice. This state is in more danger from suppression than from violence. Violence indeed is the child of suppression." And that was William Allen White. Newspapers like the Times Eagle reflect the dismal and deadening. Yet, through dark funnels, history is understood. "In a dark time, the eye begins to see," Theodore Rothke wrote, which flew on the flag of the Times Eagle every issue. From the first moment of his presidency, Donald Trump declared the mainstream media in America as the enemy of the people and of the state, and never misses an opportunity to call it fake news, especially when the media criticizes him. Trump is a compulsive liar who demands that truth is only that which benefits and adulates him. He regards the First Amendment in particular as a permissively seditious and unnecessary impediment to be ignored and ultimately abolished, despite its being the bedrock of American thought and speech. Peter Smith, editor-publisher of the incredible Bay City Slug, the paper that hates progress, wrote, "The day the first press is confiscated or the first publisher of an alternative publication is branded a terrorist and jailed for national security reasons, the mainstream media will have to wake up." Though corporate owners of the print media might try and ignore the event, I'm certain reporters and journalists who work for these monstrosities of misinformation will sound the alarm. Should they fail in their sacred duty, the alternative press will become the underground press, and we will have turned back to the black days before the revolution. And that was Peter Smith of the Bay City Slug. And that was my article, "The Eagle Has Landed," a rewrite of several other previous articles on celebrating the rebirth of the North Coast Times Eagle 40 years ago this coming Saturday. And I'd like to read, in commemoration of the Space Eagle, something I wrote, and perhaps you might have heard once or twice on the air, "Stardust." The 20th is Saturday, yes. I was going back through my mind thinking, is it or is it not? But yes, it is Saturday this year. "Stardust. We burst out of our egg into a history infinitely larger than our own, flung out among rocks and stars that hurtle away from the center of a cataclysm at speeds greater than light. Our Earth is a mote from that moment of creation, if indeed that is how the universe began, and it continues to be thrown back to God knows where. We might never know, but we will exhaust the rest of our history attempting to find out. It is doubtful that we will more than scratch a few score of the billion stars in our single galaxy before evolution discards us for something else, or we quicken the process by our own pervasive ingenuity. We pursue the exploration of space in much the manner our European ancestors forced themselves upon the larger world, in fierce competition as merchants and soldiers from separate nations in perpetual conflict. We are a species of insatiable plunderers, though of course we tell ourselves that we are not, that we seek only knowledge, but our great hunger is for wealth and for what is useful to us. Unless we experience a mass epiphany overnight, we will most likely behave beyond the ozone, the same as our predecessors beyond the oceans. We will pillage planets and hammer and smash space matter until it is functional. We have virtually sucked Earth dry, and our vision of the universe is one huge orchard of riches. We cover our own planet like maggots on a peach. Our atomic structure is collapsing, and internal combustion resulting from the compost of our restless numbers. We are perilously close to extinction by our own industry. Not so long ago, we were savages tormented by our ignorance of the strange world that was our home. We have not evolved particularly much, except that our savagery is more muscular. We have the power to crack Earth. Our situation as a result of possessing that power is desperate. If we cannot contain its power over us, Earth will probably nova. Our prospects are the stuff of cheap science fiction. Our only hope might be to send some seedlings off the home planet so that some might survive the long nuclear winter and perhaps repopulate the incubator when it stops glowing or germinate someplace else, if in all the vast cosmos there is any place else for us. We repeat the old errors. We do not leave Earth as members of a single bioplasm, but as relentless opponents. If it was absurd for Europeans to spread across the Earth's oceans and claim foreign lands for kings and countries never heard of by the inhabitants of the far shores, how much more so for space-suited humans to plant flags on barren worlds and say that they belong in perpetuity to small parts of a rocky speck, indistinguishable, if even visible, among the lights of space. We ought to consider the United Nations as a central agency for space exploration. It would avoid the wasteful duplication of resources and money consumed by the ruthless competition between superpowers and make them available for the millions of Earthlings who are in need of food, housing, and education. If the idea seems outworldly, it might be useful to remember that UN medical teams eradicated smallpox. Of course, governments would try to prevent the idea from germinating because it will interfere with their individual plans of military supremacy beyond Earth. The irony about all this is the intent to freeze the international exchange of scientific information during the space age, the polarization of intellect, and the resurgence of nationalism at the same time we set out to explore the universe. We should not get starry-eyed about the professed manifest destiny of our own nation and its parochial space program. Many of the planned shuttle flights were to be secret military missions, primarily to do with Star Wars. Efficiency must give way to poetry, however. No machine or computer can view Earth with the same personal response as a human. Earth is, after all, our neighborhood, our nest. It will not be our technology which saves us, but our distinct human perceptions. The efforts to go off-planet seem to have little to do with the rest of day-to-day humanity, yet our era makes the first baby steps of an adventure that will occupy us the rest of our time in the cosmos. We might be the last generations to be a single-planet species. One world history and philosophy will be mere prelude to the immense galactic story that awaits our bumbling, erratic first paragraph. An age is superseding an earlier one under our feet, or more truthfully, over our heads. And perhaps it might be worth remembering that it is not our divine right to eat the Milky Way. And that was something I wrote. Stardust. And now, Moonshot by my friend Arthur Honeyman, a poem. He wrote it on July 21st, 1969, the day after. Yesterday went beyond history, and I watched it while my mind couldn't fathom or accept or believe what my eyes saw. Everything seemed, looked, like a stage, a science fiction stage, as the camera swung round and visited the miles of barren, flat lands and the hills peaking in the distance and transmitted each image 240,000 miles to my eye receptors. Then came the spacesuits with voices from inside. Men they were supposed to be. Men that I couldn't grasp or see. Bouncing, floating, like a robot. But really, they say, it was 1/6 gravity. Yesterday's events, my left-wing friends will say, were a waste of money, for man is too small to take care of Earth, never mind littering or garbaging or cluttering the rest of the universe, or even a piece of it. Much as they might be right, I'm all for space travel. But already I see man carrying his ego beyond the world. Yesterday he drove his prejudicial American flag into the soil, claiming peace and territory at the same time. Already he carries his colonial ambitions beyond the Earth's atmosphere in the spirit of Columbus or Admiral Byrd or modern-day presidents claiming for the United States its democratic imperialistic idiosyncrasies. I'm all for space travel. I think it could be the salvation of man. Our world of overpopulation may force us to move on or destroy ourselves. But I pray to some God with some vague hope that there is such a God, that yesterday's primitive performance of erecting American flags or Russian flags or Andorran flags symbolizing possession is never repeated again. But knowing man, knowing the U.S., it will be, and man will garbage the universe. Yesterday went beyond history, but man stayed primitive man. Yesterday, I don't believe what I saw, that man stood and walked on the moon, that he stood there and borrowed probably forever from the once awesome, silent sea of tranquility. And that was Moonshot by Arthur Honeyman, who wrote that on July 21st, 1969. And this is Michael McCusker. 256 years ago yesterday, July 17th, 1763, Astoria's namesake, John Jacob Astor, was born in Astoria's German sister city, Waldorf. He was America's first millionaire and also its first New York City slumlord, foisting cheap housing on poor immigrants, mostly white Europeans. Who does that make you think of? The grandson of another German immigrant, perhaps, whose native German hometown has set out the not welcome mat for the grandson because of his virulent racism. And today, July 18, 1925, Adolf Hitler's manifesto, Mein Kampf, was published in Germany, which became the Nazi Bible for world domination. Happy Moonwalk Day.